KSDP, 8:30 a.m. in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in False Pass, and KKQA, 88.1 FM in Accutan, Alaska.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Investigators are still determining what caused a plane crash near Nome, Alaska on Thursday that killed all 10 people on board. Over the weekend, crews retrieved pieces of the wreckage from an ice floe. As KNOM's Ben Townsend reports, Alaskans joined together to mourn the lives lost in one of the state's deadliest plane crashes in recent decades.
Crews had to act fast over the weekend to get to the crash site before a storm closed in on the region. The Coast Guard says the Cessna Caravan, which was traveling from Unalakleet, crashed on an ice floe 34 miles from Nome, killing the pilot and all 9 passengers on board. Nome Volunteer Fire Department Chief Jim West Jr. says he stressed over who to send to assist in the recovery because several of the first responders knew the victims.
The number of bodies out there or casualties, things like that affects people differently. Do we sacrifice ourselves for the younger crew that's coming up? I mean, we've been through it. We've seen it. We've dealt with it. They haven't.
Crews were able to retrieve the bodies of all 10 victims before freezing rain and high winds hit. Helicopters were seen bringing pieces of the plane back to Nome throughout the afternoon Saturday. National Transportation Safety Board Chair Jennifer Homendy said it's too early to speculate on the cause of the crash. NTSB officials will travel to Nome to inspect the plane parts. At a vigil Saturday night, Unalakleet resident Tony Haugen reflected on the impact of the crash.
When the region has something that occurs like this here, it doesn't only affect one community. I mean, we feel the pain region-wide.
Troopers have named the 10 victims, who range in age from 30 to 58. Two were from Nome, including the pilot. Two were from Unalakleet, and 6 were from South Central Alaska. In Nome, I'm Ben Townsend.
The state of Indian Nations is strong and on the rise, says National Congress of American Indians President Mark Macaro. He delivered the annual Indian Nations address Monday to tribal leaders who are gathered in Washington, D.C. Macaro says the first few weeks of the new presidential administration has been tumultuous, but says Indian country has the tools to work together and leaders need to focus on defending tribal rights.
I strongly affirm it's time to speak up. It's time to stand up. Tribal leadership must hold the federal government accountable to these commitments. That's why we are here.
Tribal leaders are attending NCAI's legislative winter session, which wraps up on Thursday. Singer Buffy St. Marie has been stripped of the Order of Canada. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, it comes a year after a CBC investigation that found her claims of Indigenous ancestry were not consistent with public documents.
The Order of Canada is an award that recognizes people who have made a significant contribution to the country. It's presented by the Governor General of Canada. In its more than 50-year history, only 8 people have been expelled from the order. Buffy St. Marie becomes the 9th. Her award was terminated nearly 30 years after she was appointed in 1997. The investigation found that St. Marie's birth certificate shows that she was born in Massachusetts in 1941, of white parents, and that was witnessed by an attending physician. That's also reaffirmed by a marriage certificate, the U.S. Census, and a life insurance policy. St. Marie has faced these accusations before, but said in the past that she did not misrepresent herself.
I'm an artist, an activist, a mom, a survivor, and a proud member of the Native community with deep roots in Canada.
She also claimed the documentary was full of mistakes and omissions. In a written statement, she said being an Indian has little to do with sperm tracking and colonial record keeping. It has to do with community, culture, knowledge, teachings, and your family. The Governor General's office says it does not comment on the specifics of termination cases. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by Sanofsky Chambers Law, championing tribal sovereignty and Native American rights since 1976, from opioids litigation to treaty rights to tribal self-governance, with offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska. Sanofsky Chambers Law.
DT Track, your healthcare partner, provides access to a nationwide network of qualified healthcare temporary staff, including medical billing professionals that optimize your revenue cycles. More at dt-track.com who support this show.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
Really just expands across the state. There were connections all over and some really wonderful people.
Family and friends remember the 10 people who died in the Bering Air crash. From Alaska Public Media, this is statewide news on Alaska News Nightly for Monday, February 10th. Good evening, I'm Wesley Early. Also tonight, the revival of a liquefied natural gas terminal on the Kenai Peninsula could offer much needed energy relief.
Not having gas in 2028 is not an option for Chugach. We absolutely need to have that.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Rural Alaskans knowledgeable about fish and wildlife resources in their region may want to consider applying for a seat on the Federal Subsistence Regional Advisory Councils. Council meetings serve as a forum for public involvement in federal subsistence management. Apply by Sunday, February 16th. More information at 1-800-478-1456 or email subsistence@ios.doi.gov. This message sponsored by the Office of Subsistence Management.
A 17-person team from the National Transportation Safety Board is in Nome to investigate the crash of Bering Air Flight 445 and assist families of the victims. 9 passengers and a pilot died in the crash Thursday afternoon on a flight from Unalakleet to Nome. The highest-ranking official from the NTSB traveled to Nome with the team to oversee the investigation. Jennifer Homendy joined KNOM's Ben Townsend for an interview. She started by explaining how her agency responds immediately after a crash.
Typically, when we get notification of an accident that occurs in any mode of transportation, and the NTSB doesn't just do aviation, we do all modes of transportation, we'll get a notification to have what we call a chairs call. So we'll all get on the line and talk about what we know. And we'll talk about, should we launch just a staff team of staff investigators, or should a board member or the chair go? And for this, we would consider this a pretty major accident. And anywhere in the United States, I or one of the other board members would go to this. I'm particularly sensitive to Alaska and Hawaii, although they're farther. If we're going to go to Michigan or Illinois, we shouldn't treat anywhere else differently just because it's farther. So I think it's important. Aviation safety is critical, and aviation is part of a way of life in Alaska. So I thought it was critical that we be here as well.
I think, like you said, air travel is critically important, especially in Western Alaska. What can you tell me about what your time and energy will be focused on when you're here, while you're in Western Alaska?
Yeah, sure. So whether it's here or anywhere else, first and foremost, the priority is victim rescue or recovery. And so in those initial stages of before we even start our accident investigation, in those initial stages, we really are standing back and allowing those that are responsible for rescuing or recovering victims are able to do that without us getting in their way. That is the priority. And so that continues forward. We do what we need to support them in their efforts. And then at the right time, we will begin our investigation, which includes documenting, in this case, the wreckage. And usually when the recovery efforts are going on, we can begin our preparations for the investigation, make sure our whole team is en route. But again, we don't want to disturb those life-saving moments or the recovery of the victims to make sure families get their loved ones. And then for this, we had investigators pretty early here, And then we had some that were also traveling from across the U.S. that have different specialties. And then, of course, I and some others came out of D.C. But we do have a regional office that is based in Anchorage. So we do have a team that is full time in Alaska. So they were able to get here pretty quickly.
Are there any other details you're able to share about the circumstances that led up to the accident itself?
Not yet. It's still early. Like I said, the initial stages are victim recovery, and then it's wreckage recovery. So once the victims were cared for and recovered, then we move towards moving the wreckage and slinging the wreckage with A-STARS. And it was in four loads. And so the first one went at about 2 o'clock yesterday, and we finished everything by 6 o'clock. We had a pretty short window because of the weather, so we knew we had to get it off the ice. We were able to do that and then move it into a location right near the airport in a hangar to begin our examination. So that is the focus, is now that we have the wreckage, it's documenting it all day today. They spent most of the day weighing the personal effects, because they'll do as standard in any investigation, weight and balance check. And again, that is standard. So they collected all the personal belongings and other items and weighed all of that to get that documented. And then they laid out the wreckage itself.
That was National Transportation Safety Board Chair Jennifer Homendy speaking with KNOM's Ben Townsend. She says the agency may take up to a month to issue a preliminary report on its investigation. And the 10 Alaskans killed in the plane crash near Nome Thursday include a mentor to new teachers, a school counselor, and two employees with the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium who were traveling to service a local water plant. As Aliona Naiden with the Alaska Desk reports, Alaskans across the state are mourning the lives lost.
Tears, prayers, and words of support filled the old St. Joe's Hall in Nome on Friday as dozens of residents gathered for a vigil. Local religious leaders encouraged residents to rely on their community and local counseling services to process their grief. Terry Komonosoyak says he came to the vigil to support those who knew some of the crash victims.
My grandpa always said, "Inupiaq will help Inupiaq," which makes a lot of sense. Human beings should help human beings, which makes lots and lots of sense. So you have to be close up here.
As the investigation continues into what caused the deadly crash of a Bering airplane, Alaskans across the state are mourning and organizing ways to support the families of those killed. That includes a cakewalk in Inuvialuit, an auction in Kotzebue, and a coffee shop collecting donations in Eagle River. Meanwhile, Alaskans have been sharing stories and memories of the 10 people on the flight. They ranged in age from 30 to 58. Two were from Nome, including the pilot. Two were from Unalakleet, and six were from South Central Alaska. Several were traveling to support local school and infrastructure projects, including Nome mechanic Don Erickson. His friend Michael Nichols remembers working with him.
I was a fuel truck driver, and he was a mechanic. He took care of the whole fleet. And not just here in Nome, but he actually traveled around the villages taking care of a lot of stuff. Really good guy.
Leanne Ryan, a retired school teacher and a volleyball coach from Asilla, was also on the flight. She visited rural Alaska schools to support new educators. In Unalakleet, she was mentoring the fifth grade teacher, says Warren Kutchatuk, the school janitor.
She was always so friendly and so always smiling and down-to-earth woman. So she will be greatly missed at the school.
Ryan's longtime colleague and friend, Liz Arillo, said that she's spoken to people who were grieving some of the victims she did not know.
This tragedy really just expands across the state. There were connections all over, and some really wonderful people that were really trying to make a difference in rural Alaska.
A tragedy of this magnitude has not happened here in years. It hit the residents especially hard because it happened on such a normally scheduled commercial flight, says Unalakleet City Administrator Kelsey Ivanov.
It's really hard and close-hitting because it could have been
any of us, and it's really sad.
Bering Air is the predominant airline on the Seward Peninsula, connecting villages along the northwest coast to essential services in other parts of the state. Bering Air resumed operations on Saturday, and planes landed across the region, unloading groceries, packages, and passengers. Residents in Golovin, Noatak, and other villages came to greet them. They showed their support by holding signs and offering hugs. In Savunga, residents stood on a frozen airstrip, and as the crew unloaded the plane, they sent to them in St. Lawrence Island, Yupik. In Nome, I'm Alona Naiden.
The Alaska Senate passed a bill today that would allow teenagers to serve alcohol at restaurants. The bill would lower the minimum age to serve alcohol from 21 to 18. If the bill becomes law, 18-year-olds could serve alcohol in breweries, distilleries, wineries, hotels, lodges, resorts, and restaurants. The minimum age to serve in a licensed bar and any other venue offering adult entertainment, though, would remain 21. The restaurant industry is backing the bill. The head of the state's largest hospitality group told lawmakers that lowering the minimum serving age would help alleviate a labor shortage. Alaska is one of just three states, along with Nevada and Utah, to require restaurant servers to be 21 or older. Support for dropping the minimum serving age was not universal. The head of an anti-alcohol abuse advocacy group told a Senate committee the move could normalize underage drinking and undermine public health efforts. The bill would also require bars and other businesses selling alcohol, like liquor stores, to post signs warning that alcohol is linked to an elevated risk of cancer. A similar bill passed in the final moments of last year's session, but because the bill passed after midnight on the final day of the session allowed by the Alaska Constitution, Governor Mike Dunleavy vetoed it. The bill passed the Senate unanimously and now heads to the State House. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, elementary school athletes in Juneau learn about Indigenous culture through Native Youth Olympics.
Some athletes say, you know, I was never rooted to my culture. I was never connected to my culture. And since I started the games, I feel more closer.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
You can make a difference in the lives of Alaskans. Every year, hundreds of nonprofits provide warm meals, safe places, and resources to hundreds of thousands of Alaskans. By supporting Alaska's nonprofits when you apply for your PFD, you're giving more opportunity, more hope, more chances. This year, make more possible with the click of a button. Don't forget to give via PicClickGive when you apply for your PFD. This message sponsored by PicClickGive.
A Fairbanks mother was arrested over the weekend after her 6-year-old son was found dead in their University Avenue apartment. On Friday, Fairbanks police responded to a caller who reported that she had not heard from a client for quite some time, so she entered the apartment to check on 36-year-old Heather Alexi and her children. Upon entering, she discovered the dead child. FPD police determined that the child was a homicide victim. He is 6-year-old Peter Alexi. Peter's mother, Heather, and his 5-year-old sister were not at the scene and could not be located in the Fairbanks area. Detectives tracked Heather Alexi's cell phone to Anchorage. They asked for the public's assistance, and thanks to numerous calls and emails from the community, they were able to pinpoint their location. Officers from the Anchorage Police Department were sent to a home in the Mountain View neighborhood where they found Heather and her daughter unharmed. Her 5-year-old daughter is safe and in state custody. On Saturday, Fairbanks Police Chief Ron Dupuy asked for the public's patience and understanding as the investigation continues. He also thanked the Anchorage Police, Tanana Chiefs Conference, and members of the public who provided information. Meanwhile, the North Slope Borough is examining their policies after its police officers transported a teenage boy's body in an open sled through Utqiagvik on Wednesday. KOTZ's Desiree Hagen reports.
A video shows a grisly scene. A police truck with lights flashing, followed by an all-terrain vehicle pulling a sled with a body in it down an icy Utqiagvik road.
Nobody ever wants anything like this. That was just heartbreaking.
This is how Vanessa Zoe Vasquez first found out that her little brother, 17-year-old Christian Vasquez, had died. She had been searching for him, and she recognized his gray ski pants and black boots from the video that an acquaintance sent her. North Slope Borough Police transported Christian like this across several city blocks on the way to the community's morgue.
Never on earth would I have thought that's how my brother was going to be taken out, carried away like nothing, like a piece of garbage.
Zoe says it broke her. She filed a complaint with the department and shared the video on social media.
I just felt like they weren't going to do anything about it. That's why I posted the video on Facebook so I could be heard.
The video has now been shared thousands of times, prompting widespread outrage. Zoe says North Slope Borough Mayor Josiah Pudkatuk and other officials, including the chief of police, visited Zoe's home and formally apologized.
I kind of felt better after they did that because I think I just needed to hear that there were people out there who knew that that wasn't right.
The mayor's office could not be reached for comment before airtime. But in statements, Pudkatuk's office said there was a critical lapse in judgment, that challenging terrain and weather conditions required the use of the ATV, and that the supervising officer had been, quote, released from employment. Three supervising officers had also been placed on leave. The mayor's office is investigating policy, procedures, and personnel. Zoe says she never wants this to happen again. She hopes that Christian is remembered for being a lovable teenager who cared for others more than himself. She says he would never say no if someone asked for help.
He was somebody's, you know, little brother, my little brother. He was somebody's son. He had a whole village, too. He has a big family. And they all cared for him.
A date has not yet been set for Christian's memorial. Reporting from Kotzebue, I'm Desiree Hagen.
If you or someone you know is struggling with emotional distress, you can contact the Alaska Care Line at 1-877-266-4357. After years of stasis, the historic Kenai Liquefied Natural Gas Terminal could be getting a second act. That's after Harvest Alaska, a subsidiary of Hillcorp Alaska LLC, announced on Thursday its plans to acquire and redevelop the facility. As KDLL's Ashlyn O'Hara reports, the move is the latest effort to stave off South Central's looming natural gas shortfall.
It's a serene scene on the beach near Marathon's Kenai LNG terminal on Thursday evening. People walk their dogs along the frozen surf. And the low sun silhouettes the angular arm of the company's old terminal port. Aside from the occasional sound of rocks tumbling down the nearby bluff, it's quiet. But that could change. On the same day, roughly 600 miles away in the state capitol building, Trish Baker makes an announcement.
There is a potential solution for the gas supply issue. Whereby Harvest would own, operate, and develop LNG facility on the Kenai Peninsula, making imported LNG available to Chugach, Marathon, and other Rail Belt customers.
Baker manages government and business affairs for Chugach Electric Association, one of the cooperatives that powers homes around South Central Alaska. On Thursday, Chugach announced a planned partnership with Marathon Petroleum Corporation and Harvest Alaska to bring the Kenai LNG terminal back online after a decade of dormancy. Under the new agreement, Harvest would acquire the facility from Marathon and change it to an LNG import rather than export hub. Peter Michicki is the mayor of the Kenai Peninsula Borough and used to run the LNG terminal. He sees LNG imports meeting residents' short-term energy needs while a long-term fix, such as the Alaska LNG pipeline project, is developed.
I believe that a pipeline is necessary through the spine of Alaska for a lot of commerce that simply isn't occurring now because the cost of energy is so high. This is a short-term solution to keep us from going cold and dark.
Thursday's announcement comes at a crucial time for South Central. It's been almost 3 years since Hillcorp, the dominant oil and gas producer in Cook Inlet, announced it wouldn't enter into long-term contracts with regional utilities. Since then, the clock's been ticking. Here's Baker again.
Not having gas in 2028 is not an option for Chugach. We absolutely need to have that.
Michicki, the borough mayor, says repurposing an existing facility could give this project a competitive advantage over others being proposed to address the gas shortage. He says the key new infrastructure needed to equip the facility for imports is a way to change the LNG to a gaseous form.
What's valuable about the terminal is that the actual terminal, the place where the LNG tanker ties up, is in existence.
The terminal revival announced Thursday isn't a done deal. Baker with Chugach Electric told lawmakers that design work still needs to get done. The facility is already licensed by federal regulators for LNG imports, and Baker deferred questions about permitting to Harvest. Harvest estimates full-scale import operations at the Nikiski terminal could begin in 2028. Reporting from the shores of Cook Inlet, I'm Ashlyn O'Hara.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
GCI, keeping schools and students connected across the state with a resilient and redundant network. Details at gci.com/education. The Federal Subsistence Board is seeking young leaders involved in subsistence and interested in learning the federal regulatory process to fill non-voting seats on the Subsistence Regional Advisory Councils. Interested Alaska residents 18 to 25 are to submit a letter of interest, including two references, by Sunday, February 16th, 2025. More information at 907-444-1376. This message sponsored by the Office of Subsistence Management.
Bethel's Pete Kaiser has won his ninth Kuskokwim 300 sled dog race. As KYUK's Sage Smiley reports, his second half strategy stood up to a formidable challenge from some newer teams.
Rain started to speckle the Kuskokwim River ice as Bethel musher Pete Kaiser and his nine dog team ran under the arch early Sunday morning to tie the all-time record for Kuskokwim 300 wins.
Ladies and gentlemen, the 2025 K300 champion, nine-time K300 champion, Pete Kaiser.
At the finish line, Kaiser said it's been a tough year.
You know, didn't know how it was going to play out, but these dogs are so talented. It's really all credit to them.
He said making it with a good team to the K300 made him just as grateful as tying the all-time record.
I mean, honestly, not even the nine thing, but just how challenging of a year this was for training and being able to pull this off after so many setbacks and difficulties this year. And honestly, at a few points, not even wondering if we'd have the team ready to even do the race at all. So I'm pretty proud of our efforts to get us to this after this training season this year. So that's really what's sitting with me right now.
This year's Kuskokwim 300 sled dog race was unique in many ways. It was delayed 2 weeks because of warm weather, low snowpack, and dangerous river conditions. The day before the race, officials moved the start up by 7 hours in anticipation of another warm weather window. Kaiser's winning time of 36 hours 41 minutes comes within 10 minutes of the speed record, albeit on a somewhat modified course. But in contrast to the conditions and course, the outcome was far from unexpected. Kaiser's ninth win in 11 years matches the all-time win record set by Denali Park's Jeff King, a legend in the sport. For 17-year-old Emily Robinson of Nenana, the Kuskokwim 300 was a new challenge, the first 300-mile race of her career.
I've been competing against adults for a little bit now, but to have it be the K300, it's just a completely different field, and it changes a lot of different aspects of the racing. So yeah, I just really had fun, and I really enjoy competing with these. Really, the entire field was men except for me, so yeah, a lot of guys. That really know what they're doing.
Robinson, who came in sixth place, won Rookie of the Year, and her finish also matched the top result by a woman in the Kuskokwim 300 in more than 20 years. Of the 17 mushers who set out from Bethel for the race to Aniak and back, none scratched this year. In fact, the field was tightly packed. 15 mushers finished within 5.5 hours of the winner. 2025 Red Lantern winner Ebba Winstrup-Peterson, the last to finish the race, crossed the line around 15 hours after Pete Kaiser, in the evening sun on the Cusco. With help from Angela Denning, in Bethel, I'm Sage Smiley.
The 2025 Native Youth Olympics Junior Celebration took place over the weekend in Juneau. Elementary school students from across the borough competed at events like the seal hop, two-foot high kick, Inuit stick pole, and more. KTOO's Clarice Larson watched the competition and has this story.
Peyton Lott patiently sits on a mat in the Zantakahini Middle School gym on Saturday morning, waiting for her next competitor in the Inuit stick pole event.
I love doing these because it shows what strength in the people who did them.
The game involves two athletes facing each other and holding a wooden stick, one with an inside grip and the other with an outside grip, with no gaps between their hands. Then, when the ref says,
ready, pull!
Keep going!
They grip and pull against one another until someone breaks free with the stick in hand, winning the match. Last weekend, Lott and nearly 100 other elementary age athletes competed in the event, and others as part of the Native Youth Olympics 2025 Junior Celebration. Lott is Clinkett in Yupik and a fifth grader at Harborview Elementary. She got involved with the games 3 years ago after walking past the club while waiting for her mom to pick her up from school. Now she's pretty hooked.
I wake up early the day of the competition. And this is the only time when my parents tell me to go to sleep, I will.
The competition opened with a cultural dance and song performance. The two-day event was hosted by the Central Council of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska and in partnership with the Juneau School District. On Friday and Saturday, students competed in six distinct events, including the Alaskan High Kick, Scissor Broad Jump, and Seal Hop. All the games are rooted in Indigenous hunting and survival traditions used in the Arctic. Now, competitions for games like these are held across the state as a way to foster community and promote physical fitness during the cold winter months. Caitlin Lewis is a coach and traditional games specialist for Tlingit and Haida.
These games originate from Alaska specifically. So long ago, before cell phones, radios, any sort of technology, hunters created these games to communicate with one another out in the Arctic.
Just like the students, she too was a young athlete who practiced the games growing up in Alaska. She says the games are more than just testing your physical fitness. It's about connecting with your community and celebrating Alaska's Indigenous traditions.
I've had some athletes say, you know, I was never rooted to my culture. I was never connected to my culture. And since I started the games, I feel more closer and I feel a sense of identity, and that is very impactful to me.
Mila Neely, a freshman at Juneau Douglas High School Yada'ak-Kathle, helps measure the height of athletes' kicks during the one-foot high kick. She volunteered with other high school athletes to help with the games.
I've been doing NYO since I was in fifth grade, so like this is my fifth year doing it. I'm a freshman.
She says it's special for her to be able to help teach the next generation of athletes. She says traditional games are unique from other sports in more ways than one.
It's such a positive sport. Like, you go to other sports and like people will be like talking trash about the other team or even just like wanting to win. And like in traditional games, so many times I've seen people like give another person a tip that will help them succeed further than them in the games, because it's really just like being the best that you can be.
In early April, Neely and other high school and middle school students in Juneau and across the state will compete in their own traditional games as part of Sea Alaska Heritage Institute's 2025 Traditional Games. In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Eric Stone and Clarice Larson in Juneau, Ben Townsend and Aliona Naiden in Nome, Robin in Fairbanks, Desiree Hagen in Kotzebue, Ashlyn O'Hara in Kenai, and Sage Smiley in Bethel. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer tonight was Ammon Swenson. Tim Rocky is our producer. And I'm Wesley Early. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
the Westmark Fairbanks Hotel and Conference Center, located in downtown Fairbanks, featuring hot breakfast, Wi-Fi, and a fitness center. Reservations at westmarkhotels.com.
Join Alaska's only statewide live call-in forum to discuss the issues affecting your life. From politics to science and culture, that's Talk of Alaska, weekly on your local public radio station.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media. I turn
sideways to the sun. I keep my thoughts from everyone. It's a jungle, I'm a freak. Hear me talk, but never speak.
Never
Trouble and pain. Yeah, yeah. That's all I am is trouble and pain. accept that there's no getting off. So live it, just gotta go with it. Cause this ride's never gonna stop.
let my love throw a spark, baby. Have a little faith in me. And when the tears you cry, have a little faith in me. Have a little faith.
What are we?
What you wanna be?
Everything. without a sound. It's like falling backwards into no one's arms. Sure,